Our next presentation, the effect of nozzle design on spray drift reduction and herbicide efficacy, Josh McGinty.
Okay, thank you. Again, my name is Josh McGinty. I'm the new extension agronomist down at Corpus Christi, Texas. Co-author on this is Dr. Paul Bauman. Paul is our weed control specialist statewide out of College Station. So I want to talk to you for a little bit about some work we did in the spring of 2014 looking at different nozzles and how these nozzle designs affect spray droplet size and thus the driftability of those sprays. And the rationale for doing this really came out of these 2,4-D and dicamba tolerant traits that we're seeing in cotton now. So as I'm sure you've all heard at this point, Bayer and Monsanto and Dow, these guys have all done a really good job in reducing the volatility of these new 2,4-D and dicamba containing products to the point where volatility is almost a non-issue with these. But spray drift is definitely still a major concern. So as we know, smaller droplets are more susceptible to spray drift. They take longer to reach the target after exiting that nozzle, so they're going to be more susceptible to air currents and moving off-site. So for this first part, we want to look at different nozzle designs using some pretty cool equipment where we can measure droplet sizes of those sprays and look at the effect of these different designs on droplet size and then thus the driftability, if you will. So this was done in a low-speed wind tunnel in College Station. This is operated by USDA's Aerial Application Technology Group. This is one of three tunnels like this worldwide. This is really cool equipment. Big thanks to Clint Hoffman and Brad Fritz with USDA for letting me use this stuff. It's kind of intimidating when you find out how expensive this equipment really is. But in this photo here on the right, we're looking upstream in the wind tunnel. That little bar you see right in front of you, that's where the nozzle is actually attached. So we're looking upstream. There's a fan at that upstream end that pushes a 15-mile-per-hour wind current towards you. That's not to simulate a 15-mile-per-hour ground broadcast application. That's just to move all of these droplets, regardless of how small they are, across our sensing equipment. And that sensor is what we see in that bottom photo there. That's a Helos laser diffraction sensor. That uses a laser that's fired out of an emitter there on the right or on the left-hand side. That fires into the receiver on the left-hand side where we have a lens that actually measures the amount of diffraction of that laser, which we can then use to measure droplet size. And I use what they call an R7 lens. That lens allows us to look at droplets as small as 0.5 micron all the way up to 3,500 microns in diameter. The nozzles, as I said before, they're affixed to that vertical bar you see in the middle of the tunnel. That's not a static setup. That's actually a traverse system. So when we're measuring the droplet diameters of a spray, we actually move that nozzle from the top of the tunnel to the bottom. So we travel that the entire spray plume across the laser. As we do this, that Helo sensor is recording droplet diameters and then gives me a nice little readout for each of these runs. So I looked at five different nozzle designs. Also, we're going to kind of pool this across seven different spray solutions. Those solutions are there on the right. So we have water alone, water plus a surfactant. We also have several actual herbicide products. Surfactant was added to those as needed. So for Clarity and 2,4-D, we actually had a surfactant added to those as well. Looked at two different operating pressures, 30 and 60 PSI. Three reps for each of those combinations of solution, nozzle, and operating pressure. One rep is one traverse of that spray plume across the laser. So as I said before, we're only looking at the nozzle effect today, so this is actually pooled across all of these different spray solutions. All of the nozzles I looked at were T-Jet brand 110O2s. The first nozzle, the first design, is that XR extended range nozzle. Very simple in design, so you have a simple single orifice in that nozzle that does both of the jobs that nozzle needs to do, right? We need to meter that spray solution and we need to produce that flat fan pattern. That one orifice does both of those jobs. Then we have the DriftGuard nozzle that uses what they call a pre-orifice to first regulate the flow of that spray solution, and then an exit orifice produces that flat fan pattern. Then the AIXR and AI nozzles, these also have a pre-orifice And these are air induction nozzles, so they have venturi ports. They draw air into that spray solution before it exits. And then lastly, that TTI nozzle, this throws in what they call a mixing chamber. That's just a small chamber inside the nozzle where that solution is forced to make a couple 90-degree turns before it exits. All right, so here we're looking at the nozzle effect at 30 PSI. On the x-axis, we have our five nozzles, starting with the XR on the left, moving to the TTI all the way over on the right. Let's first look at the blue bars and that left-hand side y-axis. That's the median droplet size in micrometers or microns. So at 30 PSI, you can see with the XR nozzle, we're looking at a little over 200 microns for our median droplet size. As we move through these, through the DGE, the AIXR, the AI, and then finally that TTI nozzle, we progressively increase that median droplet size. With the TTI, now that median size is a little over 1,000 microns. The real story here, though, in terms of driftability, I think, is in that red line. That red line represents the percentage of the total spray volume that's contained in droplets 100 microns or smaller in diameter, so about the size of a human hair or smaller. Very small, very driftable spray droplets. So you can see with the XR nozzle, we're looking at about 8%, a little less than 8% of that total volume is contained in that very driftable portion. Simply by moving up to that DG nozzle, we're just adding in a pre-orifice to that design. We now drop that to 2.5%. And then when we get to something like the AI or the TTI nozzle, now that's just a very small fraction of a percentage in that driftable portion. When we raise pressure to 60 PSI, the first thing you'll notice, median droplet size decreased. So now, with, say, the TTI nozzle, that median size is about 700 microns, where it was a little over 1,000 before. But when we look at the QI-100, that driftable portion, now with the XR nozzle, nearly 18%, nearly a fifth of that total volume is in that very drift-prone portion. But again, when we get to some of these better nozzle designs, especially that TTI nozzle, you're actually looking at one-third of one percentage in that driftable portion. And you'll also notice, I don't have any mention of statistics on this, because with this equipment, everything is significant. It's that precise, so I didn't want to clutter this up too much. So these are all statistically significant differences. So we're going to shift gears a little bit. There is kind of a common thought out there that as we get these droplet sizes larger and larger, eventually we'll hit a point where we'll see a break in herbicide efficacy. And that's what we want to look at now. This is a field experiment that I did in Corpus this year, where we're comparing efficacy of both a contact herbicide and a systemic herbicide, so Gramoxone and Roundup, using those same five nozzles from the wind tunnel experiment. So we've already characterized the droplet size of these. We're going to take those exact same nozzles, take them to the field, and see what happens. These were applied at 30 PSI, 15 gallons per acre. We have palm amaranth, a couple other broad leaves, as well as an annual grass out in this field. Results were very similar among those, so we're just going to look at palm amaranth control. So with Gramoxone, you can see here, let me set this up for you. On the bottom, we have our five nozzles again, XR on the left, moving over to the TTI on the right. The bars indicate percentage control at different times after application. So 3 days after treatment with those light blue bars, 7 days in the red, and then 28 in the green. And the only significant difference I was able to pick up was 3 days after treatment with the TTI nozzle with Gramoxone. By the time we got to 7 days after treatment or 28 days after treatment, I'm not able to pick up any statistically significant differences, all getting near 100% control. Just a few plot photos of these Gramoxone-treated plots. We have our untreated check in the upper left. Then we have our XR, AI, and TTI treated plots, all very clean. Not a lot to talk about here. A few javelina tracks, that's about all we see here. So that's a good thing. Moving into control with Roundup PowerMax, same setup as before. So you'll notice we're not seeing any statistically significant differences among these nozzles with Roundup PowerMax. And again, with the plot photos, XR, AI, TTI, these are all very clean plots. Not a lot to talk about. And this is, as I said before, a good thing. So based on what we're seeing now, we can go with these better nozzle designs, really cut back on that driftable portion, that drift-prone portion of the spray, and still get good herbicide performance. I will say that this is only one run of this experiment at one location. I'm going to repeat this again next year. I also want to look at what happens when we get a little outside of the window in terms of weed size. These were sprayed at the right time, 4 to 6 inches for the Palmer. So we may be able to see some differences in control relative to droplet size if we get those weeds up a little larger. We'll just have to see how that shakes out next year. Oh, that kind of sums up what I just said. All right, well, thank you for your attention. I think we have time for any questions. Yes, sir. I'm sorry? On the effect of speed, application speed on performance. These were walked on, so these are at 3 miles an hour. I can't really say one way or the other. Yeah, I could run them on. I don't run very fast, so it probably wouldn't translate into much, but that'd be something to look at, sure. Anybody else? That was actually, the question was, what solution did we use for that droplet size data? That was pooled across those 7 solutions I showed before. So we were actually looking at the representative of 21 reps for each of those data points. We did find solution plays a significant role. It may not be significant in the field, but we're able to pick it up with that equipment. If we go from water with surfactant to water, just plain tap water, we're able to pick up a difference in droplet size very easily with this equipment. It's probably not significant in the field, though. Anybody else? All right, thank you.